It is so good to look around and see more than a few of the pews filled. It's great to have you here. And I know I speak to many of you who are online this morning and have been for weeks and probably anticipate that for many weeks to come. But it's good to have you here. And I just want to acknowledge before I get into my message, just all the work that's gone into you being able to be here today. Right from our relaunch team, through all the people who have been involved in the implementation, to our worship teams and our tech teams, and then countless prayers that have gone on behind the scenes. And we don't take that lightly. We are here today because so many have put in so much time, and I'm just so grateful for our pastoral team, our administrative team. It has not been a very usual time in any way. But again, for us to be here this morning, thank you to all of you, and thank you to God, who continues to work this out among our church and so many others that are gathered online and in person today. And all of this takes me back to a Friday afternoon in the middle of March. It was March 13th. It's the week that we started to get to know the name Dena Hinshaw. It's the week that the announcements came out that this coronavirus that had been in the news, China, Italy, was now in Canada, Alberta. And a lot was happening that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Churches were wondering what to do, how to respond. Our church board gathered online in an emergency meeting that Friday afternoon and suspended our in-person service. And then I remember the next Wednesday night, we got together again online and we made the brave and bold decision that we would not meet again in person until at least Easter, April 12th. It's been 4.5 months. And this really is our first service we've been able to invite people to register. And yes, it looks different. Very limited, very spaced out. We're wearing masks. We can't sing. Any of you thinking, how long is this going to last? Okay, any of you not thinking, how long is this going to last? What do we do when challenges like this persist? And frankly, there's a lot more challenges than how do we meet publicly as a church? In the pandemic, with all of its limitations and restrictions and anticipating going into a really weird school year, both public school and post-secondary. When's it going to end? And then beyond that, for many of you online right here, there might be other kinds of challenges. Physical illness. Emotional struggle. Stressors that maybe you're coming from the outside and just you thought they would go away. They might be financial. It might be something to do in your workplace. It might be some relational issues. And you had just hoped days, weeks, months, years ago they would resolve. And we identify with David in Psalm 13 where he says, "How long, O Lord? How long, O Lord? Enough." We've been talking about disruptions all summer. There are a lot of disruptions in the Bible where we have our plans and disruption comes. Today I want to ask the question, what do we do when disruption persists? What do we do? All the summer, this has been our image, our graphic. Disruption comes like a crack in the cement to our plans. And sometimes that crack just seems to get longer and wider. But today I want us to see that maybe it's in the crack the new life comes. Maybe there's opportunities in the challenge. Certainly that was That was what Paul came to grips with, and he didn't come to it lightly. He pleaded that the crack would go away. So I want to read our passage today. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7. If you've been around church for any length of time, you've heard this. Verse 7, Paul says, "Therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me." Paul has a disruption that's persisting. He calls it a thorn in the flesh. And there have been a lot of trees turned into paper and written on to kind of figure out what that thorn in the flesh was. We don't know. The word itself, very broad, it just means something with a point. It could have been a large stake in those days. It was a word used by doctors for a piece of their equipment. It also was used at the end of a fish hook. So this is what we're looking at here. We go with the image. You ever had a big sliver that you couldn't get out? You're just picking at it, and then you're going about your way over here, and oh, there it is again. Just there? That's it. We don't know what Paul's thorn in the flesh was. There's all kinds of possibilities. Probably the most, the one that they land on is probably something physical, an eye problem, a speech impediment, something. Others think maybe emotionally there was just some issues. Maybe depression, something like that. Others think he was referring to the opposition that was always around him. We don't know. But for Paul, as he wanted to serve God, something hit. Likely physically, again, we don't know. That just seemed to get in the way and come against all that he thought God was going to do. Three times he pleaded. We just read that the Lord would take it away. Now, verse 9 is the shift. "But he," the Lord, "said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness.'" God, enough, Paul says. No, my grace is enough. Verse 9. And something changed in Paul, where now he says, "Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me." The situation didn't change, but the perspective did. So that in verse 10, "That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Well, let's take a look at this. It talks about a perspective when challenges persist. And yes, in that it speaks to coronavirus. Now, the thing about that, those that study this and try and figure out timelines wonder if Paul could have been writing 14 years after. Just given the context of, it all came out of visions that he saw, and we'll talk about that more later. In order not to be conceited by all the visions God was giving him, he got the thorn in the flesh. Some think the visions could go back 14 years. So Paul is not writing out of 5 months of figuring something out. He's writing out of years of walking with this persistent challenge. And he shares some of God's perspective with us. And I want to talk about that today. The first part of the perspective is this. When challenges persist, there is real potential for what God is up to be hindered, to be threatened. It is a vulnerable time. Let me go at this with, as I was thinking about this, really weird, but what I got thinking about was Jungle Book. It's probably one of my favorite Disney movies. It dates me a bit, I know that. In Jungle Book, you got Mowgli, the man-child, raised in the jungle by the wolves. But when we come to meet him in the story, he's pretty oblivious. Pretty oblivious to the realities of the jungle. There are dangers he don't see in the apes and the snakes and the big tiger. He's not even aware of, but gratefully, there are also good forces. Baloo the bear, Bagheera the leopard, that are constantly watching him. And in the end, actually end up releasing him to his destiny. Unseen to him are all these things going on. And I think Paul says, in the midst of the challenge, I had to have God open my eyes to what was unseen. And so he says in verse 7, here's some things we need to know when challenges persist. Therefore, in order to keep me from being conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh. So first of all, Paul knows this came at a time when pride was creeping in. God, early on in Paul's journey with God, had been given these visions of a third heaven, and it was amazing, and it would have been so easy for Paul to get proud and to say, look what God has done for me, and look at what he's allowed me to see, and gone forward in his own strength and his pride. And so God is in this challenge. God is sovereign in this challenge. And yet, in a really mysterious way, what's the very next word? A messenger of Satan. So what is it? Is it God? Is it Satan? And Paul's answer is yes. There's the mystery. That in the midst of Paul's journey in this jungle of life, there is a force that wants to take all that's happening and thwart what Paul would do. But all the while, there is a sovereign God, much greater than Baloo the bear or Bagheera the leopard, much more sovereign, much more in control. That's also at work. And as Paul just leans into God, the opposition of the enemy is not able to land. But it's there. And in fact, I bring it up because it's not just here in 2 Corinthians. It's part of the fabric of the book. Paul is writing to the church in Corinth because they are being tempted in a number of different ways to get off track. One of them is to follow church leaders who are saying, look what the visions God has given me. Look at how well my life is going. God must be in this. And Paul's saying, no. And he's just saying behind it all, wake up. 2 Corinthians 2, verse 11, in order that Satan might not outwit us, for we're not unaware of his schemes. Here are the references to someone who had done some things that were very ungodly, and the church had responded, and now he repented. And Paul is saying, welcome him back. Love him, forgive him. Don't let unforgiveness rip you apart. Don't you see behind it is a kingdom of darkness that wants bitterness and disunity to find a place? 2 Corinthians 10, he talks about some other things. Verse 4, he says the weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. The battle we're in is not obviously what we can see. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. What God is giving us is weapons of truth, weapons of his power to demolish divine or ungodly strongholds, this ways of thinking that aren't true. See, the kingdom of darkness, when we get into challenging times, wants to come along with the lies to take us out. And Paul says, no, you come at it with truth, and you come at it in the power of God. Verse 4, verse 5, in that we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. So what's he saying? That when challenges hit, there are strongholds, there's lies that want to come along and take us out, but there's God who brings truth and his power and his grace. Just quickly, in the midst of challenges, what are two forms of attack, of ways that evil wants to take us out? The first one, I think, is just the debilitating discouragement, where we give in to the enough. The lie behind it is there's no way through. I'm alone. I can't do it. Well, that's partly true, because on our own we might not be able to. But the lie is we don't see God. Right? And how often, as a challenge persists, there's no way through. I can't make it. And God is saying, you can. And let me. Here's a story. This goes back. Ben-Hur is, it's a really old movie, but it's one that's part of culture. And in the movie, again, now we've got such special effects that back then you kind of almost, but they had this chariot scene in it. It was amazing. And I remember, I was like, it was high school. I'm watching the chariot scene. It was so cool. Charlton Heston played the main guy. And the director wanted him to actually drive the chariot, not have a stunt double. So they gave him chariot lessons. And again, what a challenge. Don't know how to drive a chariot. And he goes to him and he says, hey, are you up to the challenge? And he said, you know what? I think I can stay on the chariot. I don't think I can win. Charlton Heston said, well, you just stay on the chariot and you leave the rest to me. See, what we forget, what we don't see in the challenge is God saying, leave the heavy lifting to me. You're not alone. You may not see a way through, but I do, and it's a long view, and it's a wide view. You might think you're alone, but you never are. You might think you can't do it, but I'm saying I can do it through you. And it's not a promise that the challenge is going to go away anytime soon. But discouragement is countered by the truth that God says, I am with you and I am actively involved and I'm present. And as you just come and show up with me, lean into me, there will be strength for today and tomorrow. When that is today, there will be strength for that day. Lean in. I think the other way and lies that come, if one attack is discouragement, the other is disunity. And the lies come in so many ways. I think one of them is we just get to the end of ourselves and we stop seeing the big picture and we're just so like this that all we can see is my way. And the lies start to be, you don't have to do it. And we get resentful. The lie is, he's the enemy, she's the enemy. The lie is, if you don't see it my way, and again, you know, even in the pandemic, there's everything from we need to be very cautious to it's almost all a hoax, and it's all across the board. And we start to say, if someone isn't exactly where I am on it, they're the enemy. No. Or they're thoughtless. No. They're at a different place. But so often in challenge, if someone doesn't agree with me, they're the enemy. And it's a lie. The enemy is behind it, wanting this whole thing to blow up in confusion and disunity. I'm going to say more about that next week. I'm going to talk about the disruption of disunity. But for now, we just need to be aware that in challenging times, we can go to our corner instead of allow God to show us the big picture. And we recognize that other people are thinking too, and they're looking to God. And together we look at what He wants. And keep focused on Him. Okay, so that's the first thing God is saying. Out of it, a little question. And again, we're encouraging people to talk through the messages. And just a simple question. How can these lingering challenges lead to both discouragement and relational breakdown? And why it is important that we be aware of these possibilities and also an enemy behind them, right? Okay, so that's part of how Paul sets this up, that when the challenge comes, it is a vulnerable time, and the possibility of what he's up to being threatened is real. In many ways, two of them, discouragement and disunity. But where he spends most of his time is this next part. And that's this: when challenges persist, God is able to provide new opportunities. God is not cornered by challenge. In fact, the challenge, he is sovereign in it. And in it, he is wanting to birth new plants coming through the cracks, new opportunities that will actually advance what he's up to in our lives and through our lives. All right? The story that Annette told, Amy Carmichael. It's a little girl. I want brown eyes. God knew that challenge when she went to India would turn into an amazing opportunity to come among those needy people as one of them. Paul, too, like Amy Carmichael, God, take away this, I don't know what it was, maybe eyes that aren't seeing well. But God knew that somehow that would give him a humility that would lead into him. And look at the legacy. All these churches planted, the church moving to the West, the letters that we have, opportunities and the challenge. So when Paul was finally able to give up getting out of the challenge and lean into God, what are some opportunities that presented themselves? The first one is this. His illusion of control was exposed. Boy, how we all need that to happen. Again, let's go to verse 8. It says this. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take this thorn away. I think we get the image. We read the scripture and we think Paul was having a really tough time, and one day he said, God, take it away. God, take it away. God, take it away. And then he felt better. Pleaded. Some think the threefold isn't so much three times as a full process over time, with a beginning, a middle, and an end. Let me give you this picture, and I'm going to credit Pastor Mike with this. On Wednesday, Thursday, our staff had planning, and Wednesday morning we looked at this passage and just took some time alone, and God, what are you saying? And he talked about a picture out of this, I pleaded with the Lord. And it's in a sense saying, God, take this away. And God said, no, you have to give it. And the picture is, we come to God with clenched fists, holding on to how we want him to take it away. God, take this challenge away, my time. And God says, open your hands and let me work in it. And is it possible the three times Paul is first coming, say, God, take it away, my way. And then in the middle, he's starting to loosen, to realize God's up to something. And finally, at the end, God, my hands are open. And maybe echoing the words of his Savior Jesus, Lord, if it's possible, take this thorn away from me. Now my will be yours be done. How do we pray in the midst of our challenge? I know a lot of times I start with clenched fists. Here's my challenge, God. I've had enough. Here's how I want you to fix it. As if I have control. As if I know what's best. Maybe what God is up to, even in this pandemic, is loosening our grip. Or any other challenge, and we start to say, here's the challenge, but I realize you're God and I'm not. Your picture's way bigger than mine, till eventually we say, here's the challenge. Not my will, but yours be done. Your timing, your purposes. Because you see, when we do this, the next opportunity is for us to lean into God in whole new ways. That's verses 8 and 9. Three times I pleaded with the Lord, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. We lean into God. Now, let's go back to the backstory. Verse 7. says this: because of these surpassingly great revelations, therefore, to keep me from being conceited, God sends a thorn. Paul isn't talking about his revelations in any way to boast about them. He's only talking about them because all these other church leaders have kind of come in their pride and arrogance, and they're saying, we're the real apostles because of what God has shown us. We're the real apostles because look at Paul. Look at all the hardships he has. Look at that thorn. If he was really used of God, would he have that? Paul says, they're boasting in their strength. But I've come to boast in what Christ has shown me in my weakness. And it's a challenge to that church and ours that we don't get enamored with big. And we don't get enamored with that which looks so comfortable and successful on the outside. But we start to say, where's God doing something authentic and real? And Paul is able to say, I'm not telling you to pursue suffering. I'm not telling you to pursue a thorn, but I'm just saying my boast is now in Jesus, who comes in the midst of my challenge to do something amazing. That's what he's saying. As the story goes back to a missionary in China, her name was Gladys Aylward. It was a time there was a bunch of war going on in the area of Asia she was located in. And as the area she was in was attacked and really dangerous, she had about 100 orphans under her care, and they had to get out of there. So her and one assistant are leading 100 children over a pass into safety. And it's, talk about an impossible challenge. And as the story goes, one night, she's like, this is impossible. Can't do it. And a 13-year-old who had sat under the Bible stories came to her and said, well, remember at the Red Sea where there was no way and God made a way? And Gladys looked at this 13-year-old and said, that might be so, but I'm not Moses. And the 13-year-old in her wisdom looked at her and said, no, but God is still God. God is still God. And I think what Paul is saying is it's not the human vessel, it's the God in the vessel. It's this letter, he says, we have this treasure in cracked jars. And God shines out of the cracks. And maybe the challenge as we turn to God is the opportunity of a breakthrough and something new happening. So opportunity one, we give up our control so God can work. And then we end up finally turning to God because he's still God and he's at work. And then we actually start to see him work through the challenges. Again, look at the story. Here's Paul wandering around with his thorn in the flesh. Eye ailment, speech impediment, emotional bouts with something, constant opposition, we don't know. But other church leaders are saying, him? We got it together. He doesn't have it together. Look. But you know what? We don't even know the names of these other people who were pointing themselves up. And we have Paul's letters inspired by God. And we have a legacy of a church in the West because of Paul's missionary journey in the midst of his weakness. Because rather than giving in to the discouragement of it, rather than getting sidetracked, the squabbles, lean into God in the midst of the weakness. And new opportunities came. And I think the challenge out of this story is for us, instead of saying, God, when will COVID-19 be over and we can go back to normal? Asking the question, God, what are you up to? What are the new opportunities? In the midst of that long-term illness, that long-term external stressor, that long-term bout with whatever, instead of, God, take it away, God, it's yours. May your strength, your agenda be made perfect. And so here's the question. How, in the midst of this time, do we love God more? Do we love one another more? Do we love our neighbor more? What might be some opportunities? That's our mission. Right relationship with God, each other, our neighbor. How do we love God more? Maybe this time is taking us out of our illusion of control, so we start to say, God, what I used to put confidence in is not very confident. Take me deeper with you. What might that look like? What might that look like? Maybe there is more time. Again, discouragement will just kind of make us waste it. Give up. God may have opportunities for us to go deeper. Do some reading. Take something about those five questions that plague us and plague those around us. Find others to pray with. I don't know. What are the opportunities? Ask God. God, how in this time, in this struggle, if I open my hands, do you want me to be taken deeper with you? How about loving others? You know, I think one of the opportunities is what Jeannie said, that we can't take off our masks in here, but we can sure take off the masks maybe in a new way of what's going on inside and recognize in shared humanity, this is not an easy time, so let's stop pretending it is and talk with each other. Start looking around. Who's isolated? Reach out to them, even maybe in our isolation. In the midst of all the stuff going on with race, to say, God, in this time, what is there an opportunity for me to reach across my comfortable little racial barrier and listen, and befriend, and get to know? And boy, with our neighbors, it is a time where we can kind of say, how you doing? People we work with, we live around. How you doing with all this stuff? Well, you need some help. And partly to, in the midst of all the fear, to somehow have a deeper anchor in Jesus. And what are some opportunities in the midst of the challenge? Well, out of that, there are some questions. In what ways have you seen new opportunities emerge from past challenges in your life? How can challenges confront our pride and illusions of control? In what ways can our weaknesses function as the place where God's power is revealed? How does that work? And then the one I really hope we think about or talk about, what opportunities might there be for God to do new things in the midst of this current pandemic, both in our own lives and in the life of our church? 4.5 months ago, we made the bold decision we wouldn't be back for a month. And it's looking now like we may be back, not be back normal for quite a few more months. By God's grace, we're back here, and I thank you. And I pray it's significant and meaningful. But God doesn't need the pandemic to end tomorrow for His purposes to be fulfilled. God may have whole new purposes or a calling back to His purposes right in the midst of this. Do we have an enemy who wants to take us out? Yeah. Let's be awake to that. But let's not give in to the discouragement or the disunity that would get us off track, but instead say, God, I'm not in control like I thought I was. My hands are open. I turn to you. You have not changed. You are the same August 30th, 2020 that you were in August 30th, 2019 as you were at the time of Moses. And you're good and you have a plan. So God, I'm going to move forward. By your Spirit, show me the opportunities. Grant me the faith. Stay on the chariot. Let you do the rest. Let's pray. God, again, we can sing it so easy. Your grace is enough. Your grace is sufficient. Your strength is made perfect in our weakness. But, oh, we don't like weakness. God, you know right now in our heart of hearts where we're looking to you and saying enough. Help us here, as Paul did. However that looks or means for us, you saying, yes, my grace is enough. Christ is enough. And for Christ's sake, the sake of his mission among us, his glory, all that's difficult can be an opportunity for God to work in new and profound ways. So we look to you, Father. By your Spirit, may we open our hands. Into your hands, into your heart, we give our thorn, our challenge. Not our will, but yours be done.